Okay, we're beginning here on the last word of Chav Chet Amud Bet, Tanur Banan. Mevatlim Talmud Torah, Otsata Meit, Olachnasat Kala. One has to interrupt their Torah learning in order to perform these two mitzvot. We already discussed this back on Daf Gimel Amud Bet, that Kabbat Torah takes precedence over Limud Torah, and therefore in this instance there is an obligation on the individual to take a break, interrupt their Torah learning in order to accompany the mate, or to be Machnis the Kala, the Chupata. Now those two mitzvot we know are important mitzvot, because as we say in the Braita that we say every morning when we say Birkat HaTorah, El Devarim She Adam Ochel Perotem Olam Hazeh V'Keren Kayim Adam Haba, included in that list is the Viat HaMeit or Achnasat Kala. Now Rashi over here notes that the Achnasat Kala over here is L'Votam Yibet Aviyah L'Beit Chupata. It's not necessarily to partake or participate in the wedding itself. It is in the dancing of the woman from her father's house to the Chupa, to the Makom HaChupa, which is the public part of the wedding, meaning that the wedding will be a meal amongst the family and the close friends and the dancing and so on and so forth. But the part of accompanying the kala, which is something that involves the entire city, that is something that a person needs to join or be a participant in. And the same we'll see with regards to what Balei HaTosafot say and also the Shulchan Aruch Paskins. The same is true with Vayat HaMeit or Atzat HaMeit, that it's the part of accompanying the mate to the Kvura. It's not the actual Kvura and not the preparations beforehand, but the actual Kvura itself. Amru Alav of Rabbi Yehuda Bar Yilai, Shem Evatel Talmud Torah, Atzat HaMeit or Achnasat Kala. Now we have a story about Rabbi Yehuda Bar Yilai, who is Stam Rabbi Yehuda in Shas. So we know it's a big Talmud Chochom, and he would interrupt his Talmud Torah in order to perform these two mitzvot. But now there's a qualification. If the person doesn't have sufficient accompaniment, or is not being properly taken care of. If the person has everything they need, or the accompaniment is sufficient, then one does not interrupt their Torah learning. Well, then you have to tell us, what is that threshold to know whether you should interrupt your Torah learning or not? So, Amarav Shmuel Bar Yiniah, Mishmei Durav, Tresar Alfe Gavre, 12,000 individuals, Vishita Alfe Shipure, and 6,000 individuals blowing the shofar. Vamri La, Tresar Alfe Gavre, some say that it's 12,000 individuals, Uminaihu Shita Alfe Shipure, and amongst them, there are 6,000 that are blowing the shofar. So it's a question if it's 18,000 or 12,000. The Marsha says as the significance of the number 12,000, or the number of troops that they took to go to battle with Midian in the Midbar, and they were successful at that battle. So that's considered to be an accompaniment upon which the bracha or the shechina is shora, and therefore it's a proper amount of individuals to go. And the same is true with regards to the blowing of the shofar, similar to the blowing of the shofar in Rosh Hashanah, which is to push away the satan or confuse the satan. So to over here, the blowing of the shofar, or having these individuals who blow the shofar, is proper in order to take away from the satan's ability to be mikatreg over the death of an individual, which is usually a time of din, a time of reckoning, and therefore we blow the shofar in the same way we would blow it on Rosh Hashanah, b'yom hadin. So now that would be the proper accompaniment. So now the Gemara says, ulamar, kagon dechaitse gavre me'avula ad sichra. If there is a line of people, or the accompaniment stretches from avula, which is the shar, the gate of the city, ad sichra, Rashi says, is until the Beit HaKvarot, to the place where they give the hespedim. So if there is a line of people that goes from the exiting of the city, the shar of the city, all the way to the Beit HaKvarot, then that's already a sufficient number of people. The word sachra or sichra usually means to dam up or to cover up, and that's what it means here. It means maybe the grave side where they cover up the mate or where they bury the mate. So that's the avula from the shar, out of sechra until the grave. Rav Sheshet Amar kinitinata. Rav Sheshet said it's like the giving of the Torah. Kach nitilata. So too the taking of the Torah. Ma nitinata b'shishim ribo. Just like the giving of the Torah was given with 600,000 people present. That was Bnei Yisrael's count at that time. Af nitilata b'samach ribos. So too when the life of a Talmud Chacham is taken, then 600,000 is the appropriate number. Now it could have been that it was connected to the fact that at Har Sinai, those that stood at Har Sinai passed away from the exposure to a Kodesh Baruch Hu and had to be brought back to life each time. Therefore, it's related to the passing of an individual. But based on the way the Gemara qualifies it now, it's clear that it's connected to the fact that the person we're speaking about here is a Talmud Chacham. Because Hani Mile, the Mandakari Vitani. That's true of someone who learned Torah and learned Mishnah. About the Man, the Matne, Leitle Shiura. But someone who learned Gemara or was teaching others Torah, then there's no limit, that these are not relevant. Balei HaTosafot over here point out that now you have actually three categories, because you have a category of Kari Vitani, which are the limitations that they're arguing about over here, whether it should be 12,000 from the gate of the city to the graveside, or 600,000 individuals. That's for someone who learned Torah, learned Mishnah, maybe even learned Gemara, but did not teach. Whereas for someone who teaches, then there is no limit. But that also means that if it's someone who was not Kari Vitani, someone who is not a Talmud Chacham, just a regular individual who did not have that learning of Torah under their belt, then they would not have this requirement. That's what the Baal Tosafot over here say, Mimela Shmeina and the Mandalo Kari Vitani, Itle Shiura, that there is a shiur for that. Vein Mabatlim Talmud Torah Bishvilo, and we do not interrupt Torah learning for him, El Kdei Tzor Chol Itasekbo, only to make sure that you have sufficient number of individuals to deal with the particular mate. Again, we'll explain this in 1 second. We're going to read the halacha and the Shulchan Aruch to summarize everything that we've seen, plus what we saw earlier in the Masechta. But with regards to Mevatlim Torah, the Wotzata mate, question of whether that's an obligation, that's what the Shach says, it's a chiyuv, it's an obligation on the individual to do such, whereas the Rosh seems to indicate that it's something of an option, meaning it's mutar. It's not that you have to interrupt, but you are allowed to interrupt your Talmud Torah in order to do this, because there is a value in kavod a mate, especially when it's a mate that's a Talmud Chacham, and therefore there's a value that allows you or gives you permission to interrupt your Torah learning. The only time it's an obligation, he claims, is when it's a mate mitzvah. And that's based on the Gemara back on Gimel Amud Bet, where the Gemara speaks about mate mitzvah. The Tosafot commented back there on Gimel Amud Bet in Tosafot mate mitzvah, lav davka mate mitzvah. Tosafot disagrees and says that it's not only about a mate mitzvah, v'adin l'chol meitim shvolam. It's true of any mate. Mivatlim Talmud Torah lotziam. You interrupt Talmud Torah in order to accompany them. Ela aidi dinaka b'samuch. Gabi l'achoto mate mitzvah. Hakanami naka Talmud Torah will mate mitzvah. It's because of the lima that they're going to learn later on that involves mate mitzvah. So the Gemara consistently used mate mitzvah, but it's true of any mate. And therefore the Tosafot seems to imply that this is an obligation not just for a mate mitzvah, but even for any mate in terms of accompaniment. And that's the way that the Shulchan Aruch codifies this, the halacha. This is in Shulchan Aruch, Yoredeya, Hilchot Aveilut, Simon Shin Samach Aleph, Sif Aleph. And that is Mivatlim Talmud Torah L'Utzata Mate. One has to interrupt Talmud Torah for the taking out of a mate. L'man D'matni L'Acherim. That's for someone who taught others, like our Gemara says. And Ein Lo Shiur. There's no limit to how many people have to accompany or be a part of that. Affiliation Mo Kam Alafim Mit Batel Bishvilo. Even if there are many thousand people accompanying him, you still have to interrupt your Torah learning. Laman Dekari Vitani, that was where we saw the argument here of someone who learned Torah and Mishnah. Sounds like he didn't learn Gemara, or he didn't teach others. Dainu Shekara V'Shana, but Dain Lo Shana L'Talmidim. Didn't teach other students. Miesh Samech Ribo, Ain Tzarech Litbadel Bishvilo. If he already has 600,000, then you don't have to be Vatel for him. So it seems to me that that's probably almost every funeral out there, because almost never reached that threshold of 600,000. But there he says, first of all, Tzarich Lehitz Batel. One must interrupt their Torah learning for that individual. Laman Delo Kari Vitani, like the Baal Tosafot, he says here, someone who didn't learn Torah, Kemen Sheishlo Mishi Tasekimo, Ein Tzarich Lehitz Batel Bishvilo. Like Tosafot says, if someone is dealing with him, then it's enough. V'hui Sheishlo Masara. That's as long as there's a minion that's dealing with them. They have somebody to deal with the mate, deal with the Tara, deal with the Kvura, and they have a minion to say Kaddish by the graveside. That's enough, and then you don't have to interrupt your Torah learning. The Rama makes an interesting gloss over here, which is Yeshomim, Dachshav Min Astam Mevatlim. Today we don't ask questions whether a person learned or didn't learn. And in general, or the default scenario is that we are Mevatel, Shendecha Achad Mi'Israel, because you don't have anybody in Klal Yisrael, that then at least learn Torah and some Mishnah that has some Torah learning under their belt and not complete the Amei Aretz. And therefore the Rama believes that one has to interrupt Talmud Torah for anybody who is getting buried at this point in time, at least to accompany them. And that's what the Shulchan Aruch qualifies later on. And that's what Tosafot says over here. We mentioned that before. In Sif Bet it says, Bamed Varim Amurim Shivatlim Talmud Torah Lo Voto B'Shat Hotzato. That's only when you're accompanying them. Aval Kozman Shim Mutal Lekavro. If they're just waiting to bury them, then you don't have to be mevatel Talmud Torah for that. Meaning that the key element of where you need to be in the engaged with the mate is in the accompaniment of the mate. Taking the mate from the city, from the house to the burial place. The Tara and those that take care of the mate are limited in number. And those that do the actual burial are also can be limited in number. The main issue is the accompaniment to melaveh, to accompany the mate going out to the graveside, and that's where you have to be mevatel Talmud Torah. And the Shulchan Aruch ends off with the Tinokot Shvet Rabban Eim Mevatlin Klal. the children from the yeshiva don't stop learning no matter what. That sounds like that's a generic statement that we don't stop them from learning, even for tzatamate, that it's not appropriate. LMK, maybe it's a gadol ador or their own Rebbe, then maybe there's a possibility that you mevatel them, but it seems to be, based on Yerushalmi, that this is something that we do not do. And then in Sif Bet, he continues, if there are chevrot kedisha, if there are chevrot kedishas in the city that handle a mate and they take turns or there's some sort of rotation, then in that rotation, whoever is in the rotation comes and takes care of the mate, and then everybody else is released and can go learn Torah and do whatever melacha that they have to do. But at the shat hotza'ah, at the time that you're actually taking the mate out, Tosafot says that over here as well, that this dispensation to ignore the havayata mate when he didn't learn or when there's a sufficient number, that's only true when you're talking about Talmud Torah, which takes precedence. But that's not true with regular working individuals. They have to be mevatel from their work, afilo ilokari bitoni, even if the individual didn't learn anything. These distinctions are only relevant when we're talking about Talmud Torah, about learning Torah. But shar melachot, when it comes to any other work, one has to interrupt their work in order to accompany the mate, no matter what the status of the mate is. And if there are not chaburot in the city that take turns taking care of this stuff, then everybody has to stop and deal with the mate. But if there are people who are specifically assigned to do it, then the others can continue working, with the exception of the hotzata mate, where everybody is obligated as a baal melacha to do that. And with Talmud Torah, we saw the different qualifications of when and if you have to be mevatel Talmud Torah to do hotzata tamate. Okay, now we're continuing the Gemara. Tanya, Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai Omer, Borei Kama Chavivin Yisrael Lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. See how beloved Klal Yisrael are to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Shebechol Makom Shegalu Shechina Imahem. Everywhere they went into exile, God accompanied them in that exile. Galu LeMitzrayim, they ended up in exile in Mitzrayim, Shechina Imahem. God accompanied them there, Shenemar, because when the Ish Elukim appears to Eliyah Kohen to chastise him for the improper behavior of his children, then it says, Vayavo Ish Elukim el Eli v'yomer lav, Komar Hashem, Haniglo nigleiti al beit avicha biotam b'mitzrayim lebeit paro. Now, it's a rhetorical question, but the rhetorical question is really a statement of fact, which is that I did appear to your father's household when they were in Mitzrayim to beit paro to take them out of Mitzrayim, and b'chor oto mikol shiftei Yisrael li l'kohen l'alot al mizbechi l'aktir k'toret l'asei teifo d'fanai etnel l'beit avicha et kol ishei b'inei Yisrael. Says, I chose you from amongst all the tribes to be the one that carries the priesthood of Klal Yisrael. Hashem is saying that I came to take care of B'nai Yisrael while they were in Mitzrayim. Obviously that was Derech Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron HaKohen. And it says, haniglo nigleiti, the Marsha suggests over here, it's because of the duplicate Lashon. And it's not simply that Hashem appeared to them there, but that he was goleh, he was with them, indicates that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is mitzta'er over the galut, that he has pain over B'nai Yisrael being found in the galut. And that's like the Gemara in the beginning of Brachot and Dav Dalet, which says HaKadosh Baruch Hu is always in pain over the Churban HaBayit, and therefore he's ke'yachol experiencing the difficulty along with B'nai Yisrael. Galut of Bavel, after the Churban HaBayit to be shown, they were also sent into exile in Bavel, Shechina Imahem. There too, the Shechina was with them, because as it says in Yeshayahu, Komar Hashem Goalchem Kadosh Yisrael. This is what God, the Redeemer, says to you, Yisrael. L'manchem Shilachti Bavela. I sent for you in Bavel. Varati Barichim Kulam. I took everybody in chains. V'kazdim Baniot Rinatam. And the Babylonians were in their ships of song. Rashi over here brings that there are two possible ways to read the Pasuk. It could be that the Pasuk is describing B'nai Yisrael's exile into Bavel, or it could be describing Bavel's exile by the Medians or the Persians later on, where they're going to be sent out. And that's how the Gemara is reading it over here, which is that, Komar Hashem Goalchem, God the Redeemer says to you, Kadosh Yisrael, Manchem Shilachti Bavela, I sent to Bavel, or I went into Bavel, Baradzi Brichim Kulam, and I took the Babylonians out in chains, meaning that they were exiled by the Koresh and by the Persian Media Empire, because Dim Baniot Rinatam, and in those same ships that they were singing away, they were now shipped away into exile, and that's what brought the redemption for B'nai Yisrael in Bavel. But you see again that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Shilachti Bavela, that I went into Bavel and I was there with you to make sure that you came back out. And so too in the future, when they will be redeemed, the Shechina will be with them. So here they quote the pasuk that's found in Parshat Nitzavim, which says that Vashavta ad Hashem Elokecha v'shamata bekolo. After all this befalls you, you're going to return to Akash Baruch Hu and listen to him. Hashem will bring back your remnant and have mercy on you. And he will bring back and ingather you from all the nations that he dispersed you to. Now the pasuk, as it points out here, it doesn't say Beishiv, Hashem will bring back et shvutcha, your remnant, Vo Mermar Ela Vishav, that he will come back. Mlameid Shakarj Brochu Shabi Mahem Biben Galiot. It's as if Akarj Brochu is returning along with Bnei Yisrael from the Galut. And now it's true here that it's only speaking at the moment of the Geula, which is at the moment of the Geula, Hashem will be there and bring them back, but the fact that it indicates that Hashem is coming back at the Geula with Bnei Yisrael already shows that he was there with them during the Galut. And the idea being that he still has Hashkocha over Bnei Yisrael, it might be mitigated in some way, it might be of a lesser form, but it means that Kadosh Baruch Hu is still connected to Klal Yisrael in the Galut and has not forsaken them just because they've been kicked out of the land, but Hashkocha Hashem is clearly al Bnei Yisrael in Eretz Yisrael. Even when they go into Galut, the Shechina is around with them and gives us hope that we always will be redeemed and come back to the Geula and back to Eretz Yisrael. So Mara asks an interesting question, B'Bavel Heicha. In Bavel, in this Babylonian exile, where is he found? Amar Abaye B'Beik Nishta D'Hutzal. He was found in the shul in Hutzal. U'B'Beik Nishta D'Shaf V'Yotiv B'Narada. And the other place was the shul of Shaf V'Yotiv that's found in Narada. Rashi over here says Shaf V'Yotiv U'B'na Yochunya V'Siyato Me'Avanim V'Afar Sheviu Mehem B'Galutan. This was a shul that was built by the exile of Yochunya, where they brought stones and earth with them from Eretz Yisrael when they were put into Galut. As Rashi explains in Tehillim, Kiratsu, that they love Avadecha et Avana bet Afra. They had a love affair with the stones and with the earth of Eretz Yisrael, and that is what brought Chayin. That's what brought them grace before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because it was from the Holy Land, and that's what gave them the ability to build it and have the Shechina be Shura there, or the way that the Ebenezer says it is Kiratsu, is Kol Ratzon Avadecha. The only thing they wanted, or what they desired so badly, was to see its stone and its earth, Yechoneneinu, and that love, or that desire to go back, will allow them to build something that will result in the Hashrat HaShechina. Now, the Pashtut HaPasuk is that it's going to be in Eretz Yisrael, but Rashi is taking the Pasuk and saying, well, there's at least an interim consolation that when they built this from the product of Eretz Yisrael, that it brought the Shechina with them. Now, Rabbi Kiva Eger points you to the Ramban in the Milchomot at the end of Ketubot, who says that Narda was the Iker part of Bavel. Proof to that is the fact that the Shechina was Shora in Narda. So that made it the central city or the central part of Bavel because of that reason. The Gaonim translates Shaf V'yotiv, as Shaf means destroyed, V'yotiv means to rebuild or to settle down. And that is that this was dismantled from Yerushalayim and then rebuilt when they reached Bavel. And some of the Goanim even suggest that they were stones or earth that was taken from the Mikdash itself. And the Oroch claims that they took it out of the destruction or the stones that had fallen from the Mikdash and brought it there. Oh, that's a little difficult to reconcile with what Rashi is saying over here, which is that it was in the time of Galut Yechonia, which is 11 years before the Churban HaBayit in the time of Tzidkiyahu. And they came much earlier, so it would seem to be that either they had to have taken apart or dismantled part of the Mikdash, or more likely they just brought raw materials from Eretz Yisrael with which they rebuilt the Beit Knesset, whether that's literally or figuratively, and then that Beit Knesset became the Makom where the Shechina was Shora. Lo tema hocha vehocha, and don't suggest, based on what Abayi said now, that the Shechina is Shora in the Shul in Hutzal, as well as in the Beit Knesset in Neharda, Ella, it's a zimnim hacha, a zimnim hacha. Sometimes he's there, sometimes he's there, but they're never in two places at once. It's a big statement about the Hashrat HaShechina. The Shechina is only present in one location at a time. And that might be interesting in explaining the tension between Yosef and Yaakov, that we see that Yosef's ascendancy takes place when Yaakov is having difficulties, and then once the Shekhinah returns to Yaakov, it seems to have left Yosef, which means that the Shekhinah leaves Yaakov at the time that Yosef is sold down to Mitzrayim, and at that point, the Shekhinah is with Yosef. Because of that, all the successes that he had before are not happening now for him. Obviously, because he's in a state of mourning, that also takes away the ability to have the Ashrat HaShekhinah. Yosef, who has the Shekhinah with him, then becomes successful and rises into the being the viceroy of Egypt. And then when Yaakov gets the great news that Yosef is alive and he's then able to uplift his spirits, all the Rishonim point out that the Shekhinah came back to him at that point. At that point, it seems to be that the Shekhinah left Yosef, and Yosef's peaked in terms of his Hashrat HaShekhinah and successes, and the remainder of the story really focuses on Yaakov. That might be related to this Gemara over here, that the Shekhinah is only found at one place at one time. Amar Abaye Teiteli, so like we saw in the previous Dapim, that they were Amoraim and Tanaim, that said that this is something that I did that should be given credit for, because I did went out of my way to do something special. So Abaye says the same thing, Dechimar Chikna Parsa, when I was within a Parsa's distance, for a meal of these shuls where the Shekhinah was Shara, I learned Metzlina Hatam. I used to go and daven there. I would take a detour when I got close enough in order to daven there so that I would be able to experience the place where the Shekhinah was resident. Avod de Shmuel v'Levi. So Avod de Shmuel was in Bavel, and Levi was in Eretz Yisrael. He was a, as we saw earlier in the Masechta, he was a Talmud Mufak of Rabbi, and he learned before Rabbi and got injured in front of Rabbi, as we saw before. He had some altercation with the authorities in Eretz Yisrael and had to run away to Bavel. When he went to Bavel, he befriended Avuah de Shmuel, and they became very close compatriots. So Abiyatve b'knishta de Shafi Yavdi b'Nardo, they were sitting together in the shul. Acha Shechina, God's presence came. Shamu kol riksha, they heard a commotion because of the Shechina that was present. Kamu v'nafku, they ran out because they were scared of the presence of the Shechina, or maybe out of respect for the presence of the Shechina, they went out. Rav Sheshet Hayotiv Bebek Nishta De Shafiyotiv. Rav Sheshet, who as Rashi points out was blind, was sitting in the shul Shafiyotiv in Narda. Atya Shechina, once again, the presence of Akash Baruch Hu manifests itself. Below Nafok, and he didn't go out. He didn't leave. Now, it seems to me that's because he was blind that he did not go out. Now, in terms of sensing the presence of the Shechina, we saw before that Levi and Avuah de Shmuel didn't see the Shechina. They sensed it from the commotion. And it may be very true that Rav Sheshet also sensed it, but he couldn't do anything about it because he was blind, and therefore he wasn't able to remove himself. So, Atu Malachei Hashareid, V'kamuvatule, the holy angels came and started to scaring him or trying to frighten him to leave, as if he was doing something wrong, like he didn't move, he didn't get up out of respect for the Shekhinah that was present. Amar Lafanav, Ribono Shel Olam. So Rav Sheshet looks up to Akash Baruch Hu and says, Aluv, Shenu Aluv, Min Nidche. Someone who is oppressed or someone who is wretched, meaning that they are suffering from a difficulty, and someone who doesn't have that difficulty, who moves because of whom? He is suggesting that because he was someone who was incapacitated in some way because of his blindness, that he should not be the one that's compelled to have to move. And that either Kadosh Baruch Hu makes room for him, or the Malachi Hashareid back off. Amar Luhu Shavkua. Therefore Kadosh Baruch Hu said to Malachim, leave him alone. He's right. And that out of that respect for Rav Sheshet, Akash Baruch Hu called off the Malachim from booting him out of the shul, even though the presence of Akash Baruch Hu was felt there. But these stories are there to reinforce this idea that there was a presence of the Shekhinah in Bavel, and it was found in the shuls in Bavel. It's only interesting because these stories take place after the Geula from Bavel. After that Pasuk in Yeshaya already indicates that Hashem was in Bavel and brought them back, the Gemara still sees the presence of Akash Baruch Hu found in Bavel post the Churban Bayit HaSheni, and not that it went out to the exile in Rome or any other place where the Jews were sent. So now the Gemara quotes the Pasuk from Yechezkel, which gives consolation to the people that were going into Galut. It says, with regards to their Galut, Chayim ko amar Hashem Elokim, ki chirchaktim bagoyim, that I've distanced them in the nations, v'chifo tzudim barotzot, and I dispersed them in the lands, v'hei lehem the mikdash ma'at barotzot asher ba'u sham. And I will be for them a small holy sanctuary in the lands that they came to. And then it says afterwards, "Kibatzti etchem," I'll bring them back from those places that I dispersed them. But what is this mikdash ma'at? I'm Rav Yitzchak, elu batei knesiyot ubatei midrashot shebavel. These are the shuls and the yeshivot that are found in Bavel. Rav Elazar amar, ze beit rabbeinu shebavel. Rav Elazar says, this is the house of our Rebbe, the great one. Rabbeinu is a reference to Rav in Bavel. It's Rav's Beit Midrash in Bavel, which is interesting because Rabbi Elazar is an Amora in Eretz Yisrael, and he's saying that the Shechina is found, or that the Migdash Ma'at is a reference to Rav's Beit Midrash in Bavel. Dorash Rava, Ma'idichtiv, what is meant by the pasuk that's found in the beginning of Tehillim, Perek Tzadi, that we say every Shabbat, Tefillah Moshe, Ish Elokim, Hashem Ma'on Ata, Haita Lanu B'dor V'dor, Hashem, you were a abode, a refuge for us, from generation to generation. So what is this ma'on, this abode or refuge that we have? Elu batei kenesiot, ubatei midrashot. Once again, it's a reference to the shuls and the yeshivot. So Amar Abaye, Abaye says, Mireish, habegarisna bebeita, umaslina bebeit knishta. I used to learn at home, and then I would go and daven in the shul. Came in the Shemai lahad akamar David. After I heard this pasuk that David said, Hashem ha'afti ma'on beitecha, which is found in Tehillim Chavav, it's the pasuk that we quote in Matovu that we say every morning, Hashem ha'afti ma'on beitecha. I loved your abode, your refuge, your house, Mekom Mishkan Kvodecha, the place where your Shechina is found. So havagirisna bebeit knishta. From there I said, oh, now I should go and learn in the shul. Now what's interesting about this, and the Mashar points out already, is that all he does is quote a pasuk. Quoting a pasuk in Tehillim, that's not something that Abaye wasn't aware of beforehand. The Rashba just simply says that he paid more attention or paid more heed to this, and when he did that, this is what came out to him, but the Mashar explains. So what was new to Abaye was the explanation that was given by Rava to Ma'on in Tehillim Tzadi. That once he interpreted Ma'on Beitecha to be the shul and not just the Beit HaMikdash, so once he had this new definition of Ma'on, then he could reinterpret the pasuk that's found in Tehillim Chavav. He says, Ma'on is a reference to the shul, to the Beit Knesset, then Hashem Ahavti Ma'on Beitecha was beloved to me, the abode or the refuge where you are found, that's Makom Mishkan Kvodecha, then that must be the appropriate place to go learn. So I should not only daven in the shul, but I also should learn in the shul, because that's the place where the Shechina is found. That's the place where the abode of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is. Now, this is interesting, because as Rabbi Akiva Eger points out, that the Gemara in Brachot, on Dav Chet Amud Aleph, has the same story with Abaye, and it says just the opposite. Ve'amar Abaye, Mireisha v'garisna begobeta, I used to learn in my house, umatzlina bebeit knishta, and then I would daven in shul. Kevin Shamana Dahad Amar Bichir Ba'abi Mishmeid Ula, after I heard this memra from Ula, Miyom Shcharab Beit HaMikdash, Ein Lo LaKadosh Baruch Hu Balamo, El Arba Mot Shel HaLacha Bilvad, that once the Korban HaBayit took place, the only thing left in Hashem's world is Halacha, the Limud HaTorah, Lova Matzlina Eched DeGarisna, therefore I would only daven where I learnt. So it's the opposite way around. He's saying over there, I would not daven in the shul anymore, I would daven where I learnt, in the Beit Midrash, or in my house. Rabbi Ami, Rabbi Asi, this is quoted here in Daf Chet, and then later on in the Masechta as well. Avgav Davalu Tleisai Beit Knishta B'Tveria, even though there were 13 shuls in Tveria, L'matzo L'Ben Amudei, they'd only daven between the pillars, meaning in the Beit Midrash, Eichud Avagarsi, where they learned Torah. So you see there that Abaye did the opposite. He moved from the shul to daven the place where he learned. And over here in our Gemara, he's indicating that he moved from the place that he learned to go daven in the shul. So if you look here in the notes on the side, he says that the Yalkut and Tehillim, as the Gir says, Rova, and that's the Gir Sinein Yaakov, so that would actually solve the problem, because there it's Abaye, here it's Rova, and they would have come to opposite conclusions. But the other Rishonim think that both of them are statements by Abaye, and that they need to be reconciled. Marsha is Michalik, like the Tur says, in Or HaChaim Siman Sadeh, he says, V'hani mile la'monam, going to shul and davening with the minyan in shuls for the regular people. Aval mi sheyesh lo midrash kavua betoch beito, one who has a fixed Beit Midrash, lomed bo, and he learns there all the time, mitzvah leitpalel bo, there's a mitzvah to daven there, afilo ein lo asara, even without a minion, and then he quotes the Gemara in Brachot that we just noted, but then he qualifies that and says, mi odnei avi, the Rosh said, katab b'tshuvat sheila, v'zeh lishono, tov leitpalel met tzibur basara, better to daven with a minion, ki zman tefila lachud, v'zman Torah lachud. In our day, davening is separate from learning Torah. And we don't have this classification that Torah is our profession. We are not so steeped in Torah that we are unable to daven, like is mentioned in the Gemara in Daf Yud in Shabbat with regards to Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai v'chavirav. We're mevatel for other things, so we can certainly mevatel Torah during the davening time, and make it up for it in other times. And there where we have both Torah and Tefillah, The problem also is that if he doesn't daven with the tzibur, other people are going to learn from him. They won't worry about davening in a shul. Then every all the shuls will be empty. So therefore, that's maybe the chiluk that is noted here by the Tor. That might explain that the Gemara here in Megillah, where Abayi says that you should always daven in the shul, that's when you don't have a midrash kavua, where you don't have a place that you learn all the time, or is a fixed location for learning, or is a beit midrash kavua. That's when you should daven in the shul and not in the place that you learned. On the other hand, if you have a midrash kavua where you always learn, then you one should favor that over the shul, and that's the Gemara in Brachot. Despite that distinction that's drawn, he quotes from his father, the Rosh, the Torah, and says that today doesn't really apply, and that everybody should go to shul and daven with the minyan in shul. So Tanya, Rabbi Lazar HaKapar, Omer, Atidim Bati Knesiot, Bati Midrashot Shebavel, Shikavu Be'eretz Yisrael. Rabbi Lazar Bar Kapar says that all the shuls and yeshivot that are found in Chutzlarts in Bavel, in the end they will be brought to Eretz Yisrael. Shenemar, because it says the pasuk ki k'tavor beharim u'k'charmel bayam yavo, that just like Tavor, tallest amongst the mountains, and Carmel descends into the sea. Now the context of the pasuk is found in Yirmiyahu Mem Vav pasuk Yudchet. It's actually the Haftorah for Parshat Bo, and it's Hashem taking a shvuah that just like Tavor is one of the highest amongst the mountains, and Carmel descends into the sea, so too I'm going to bring Bavel to Mitzrayim, and they're going to put Mitzrayim into Galut. So Hashem says, just like these are fixtures, so too Mitzrayim will not be able to escape the onslaught of the Babylonians when they come to attack Mitzrayim. But then we have a Gadic interpretation about these mountains. Alot Varim Kavachomer, isn't it a logical extension? Matavor Carmel, Shlubo Elofisha'a, Lomo Torah, they only came for a short period of time to greet HaKadosh Baruch Hu at Sinai. And so he's interpreting the pasuk out of context, saying, where are they coming to? They're coming to Har Sinai to see or to witness the giving of the Torah. Nevertheless, Nikvaim Beretz Yisrael, even though they came to Har Sinai to see or witness the giving of the Torah, they were planted or fixtures in Eretz Yisrael. But places where they learn and they disseminate Torah, Achad kama v'kama, then certainly so they should be brought to Eretz Yisrael. It's a little bit difficult because Tavor and Carmel started out in Eretz Yisrael, then they went to witness the giving of the Torah, and then they went back. That's not necessarily true of the Bate Knesset to Bate Midrashot that were built from the outset there, although this might be the idea that the Bate Knesset and Bate Midrashot are really in a continuation or an extension of what took place in Mikdash, and that's why they're called Mikdash Me'at, and so they really belonged, or were from Eretz Yisrael, and draw their power from Eretz Yisrael, and therefore they will be returned in the end to Eretz Yisrael. This what somewhat negates the Gemara that we saw in yesterday's daf with regards to making conditions on Bate Knesiot and Bate Midrashot Shebavel, in order that they don't have Kedushah, because they're not permanent fixtures. According to this view, they are permanent fixtures, because they're eventually going to be lifted and brought to Eretz Yisrael, and that would seem to go against, or mitigate, that which we saw yesterday about the Bate Knesiot Shebavel were built on Tanai, that they will eventually lose their Kedusha because they will be left behind when everybody goes to Eretz Yisrael. Tarish Bar Parakara, my dichtiv, what is meant by the pasuk in Tehilim that says, Lama Teretz Dun Harim Gabnunim? Why are you prancing around, dancing around, you majestic mountains? Yatzta Batko Vamra Lahem, Lama Tertzu Din Im Sinai? Why are you starting up with Har Sinai? Kulchem balimumim atem. You are all blemished. Etzel Sinai in comparison to Sinai. This seemingly is based on the Midrash that all the mountains were trying to boast and explain why they were the ones that were the highest or the best for the Torah to be given on. And in the end, Hashem poked Har Sinai because it was the most modest and humblest of them all. And the Pasuk is saying about these mountains, Lo Taratz Dun, why are you prancing around, dancing around? But they reinterpret that to mean Tirtzu Din. Why are you taking issue with Sinai? Because all of you have some deficit against Sinai. Tivacha Gabnunim, because it says about these majestic mountains that they're Gabnunim. Tivatam Ogibain Odak. Those are the Mumim that are found by a Kohen in Parshat Emor. And there it says Ogibain Odak. He has some issue with his eyebrows, or he has a cataract in his eye. But they're playing on the word Gibain as being some sort of Mum. And Gabnunim just means plurality of mumim, according to this. And the idea being that, Amar Ravashi Shmamina, from this you conclude, Haman Diyoyer Ba Mumhu. Someone who's haughty is a flaw in of itself. I mean, that haughtiness is a classification of a blemish. That haughtiness is not just an overstatement of one's capabilities, but it's actually a deficit or indicative of a deficit or a blemish in the individual. And therefore, the other mountains weren't chosen to have the Torah be given on them because they boasted. And Har Sinai, which was the humble and the low one, was the one chosen to have the Torah given on it. Enosim oto kapandria. We said in the Mishnah, you're not allowed to make the shul into a shortcut. My kapandria. What is the word kapandria? It's probably from the Latin word, probably connected to compendium or something where you shorten or a concise manner. Amarava kapandria de kishma. It's like exactly what it means. My kishma. What does it mean? Like it says. Kamanda amar armekafna adre. Before I have to walk around all these houses, this row of houses, eobaha. I'll walk through the shul to avoid having to walk all the way around the row of houses that's here. Amarabau imayashvil miikara mutar. There was already a public easement to walk through there before they built the shul. You can't come and build the shul and then remove the public easement or the ability of the public to cross through there. And therefore, that remains intact and they can pass through there. It's not problematic to pass through the shul. Someone who enters the shul with not the intent to use it as a shortcut, mutar lasoto kapandria. They have the right afterwards to exit from the door that's most convenient for them, because that wasn't their intent when they entered into the shul. Amar Rabbi Chelba, Amar Rabbi Huna, ach nichnas the Beit HaKnesset leitpalel. Someone who goes into the shul in order to daven, mutar lasoto kapandria. Then again, if it's a matter of convenience for you to leave from another doorway, then that's fine, because you didn't enter on the intent of using it as a shortcut. You entered there with the intent of using it to daven, and then after you finish daven, you go out. You can see here, there's an otav to the gra. Gro actually changes the girsa from mutar lasoto kapandria to mitzvah lasoto kapandria. It's actually a mitzvah to exit a different way, and that's based on the proof text that we're about to bring, Shenemar, because it says in Yechezkel, in the future, by the Beit HaMikdash HaShlishi, when the people come to the Beit HaMikdash, it says, B'vo'am ha'aretz lifnei Hashem b'mo'adim, when the common folk come to see Hashem on the holidays, Habad derech shar tzafon, ishtachavot, those who entered from the northern side, you'd say, Derech Shar Negev. They will exit on the southern side and vice versa. Those that entered on the southern side would exit on the northern side. Meaning that there is some idea that when you enter to the Mikdash, you enter from one side and then exit from the less convenient side. Don't double back on your way. That might be figurative in nature, that when you do something, you don't walk back what you've done because that erases what you just did. Or it might be from the sense that if you enter from one side, then you go out the other side, because that shows Kavod HaMikdash by not going back the shorter way, but going the longer way, that you're actually tearing and going out of your way for the Mikdash itself. It also might have to do with just the natural flow of people entering and exiting, that there should be some seder to people entering and exiting the shul. And that's the way it's codified the halacha in the Shulchan Aruch, that a person enters to daven in shul should try to exit from an alternate exit from the shul, not the one that he entered from. Then the final thing it says in the Mishnah is, Alubo Asavim, if this destroyed Beit HaKnesset has overgrown by weeds, Lo Yitlosh Mipnei Agmat Nefesh, you shouldn't tear out the weeds, because it should cause people discomfort or disconcerting to people, so that they will either daven that it will be rebuilt, or they'll pay for it to be rebuilt. Batanya eno tole shumachil. You can't rip them out to feed your animals, of tole shumeniach, but you can leave them there on the spot. Our Mishnah says that it's problematic, it's only when you're feeding it your animal. That's inappropriate. That's taken away from the agmat nefesh. You just rip up the weeds and leave them there, that also cause that same agmat nefesh. Tarabanan, beta kvarot ein noagim bahen kalut rosh. When it comes to a cemetery, one cannot be frivolous, cannot act in a manner that's inappropriate for the surroundings of the cemetery. Eimarin v'hen beima. First thing you don't do is graze animals in the Beit HaKvarot. Even though it's grown over with grass or there's grass there, that's not the appropriate thing to do. Ve'emolichim v'hen amat amayim. You don't put a water channel through there, whether it's an irrigation channel or a water source channel, amat amayim. You don't run it through the Beit HaKvarot. Over here, it might be because it destroys the kvarot when the water overruns, or it loosens the earth, or it might be for problematic in terms of the hygiene of the water, which is that the water will be contaminated with the decomposition of the metim that are going through there. Vein melaktim ben asavim, and you can't go and collect weeds or collect grass in there. Vim lekeit, if you do collect them, sorfan bim koman, you have to burn them on the spot, mipnei kvod ha-metim, because that is the honor of the metim. Where it says, ahai, that's honor of the metim, and what part is it going on? Ilema seifa, if you're talking about the last statement of the Braita, kevin shesofim bim koman, my kavod metimika, to burn them on the spot, what type of kavod amet is that? The reason you burn them on the spot is so nobody's suspicious of you taking them and then feeding them to your animals. So you burn them on the spot to show that you're not doing anything that is anything inappropriate. But it's certainly not kavod hamet, ela reisha. It's going back on the beginning of the Braita, which says, einu agim ben kalut rosh. Why aren't you not knowing kalut rosh? That's kavod hamet, meaning that the people that are buried there, it's only appropriate that one conduct themselves in such a manner that is not problematic, including ein ochlim v'shotim sham, you don't eat and drink there, ein korim v'shonim, you don't sit and learn there, ein machshavim cheshbonot, you don't do business transactions there, and you don't graze animals there, and you don't put a water channel through there, and you don't make them into shortcuts, and you don't collect or pull out the weeds or pull out for feed in those places, because those are all a pegiah in kavod hamet. Okay, now we move on to the next Mishnah. Rosh Chodesh Adar Shecholiot B'Shabbat. When Rosh Chodesh Adar falls out on Shabbat, here we're going to begin to speak about the Kriyat HaTorah, and because this is Masechet Megillah, it starts with the Arba Parshiot and Adar, and so therefore on Rosh Chodesh Adar, where it falls out on Shabbat itself, Korim B'Parshat Shkalim. We read Parshat Shkalim, we'll see in the Gemara Machloket as to whether that's the Parsha that you read for the Torah reading or for the Haftorah reading. Chaliot B'Tocha Shabbat, if Rosh Chodesh Adar falls out during the week, Makdimim L'Shabbat. We move it up a week, we read Parshat Shkalim on the Shabbat before Rosh Chodesh. Umafsikim the Shabbat Acheret. And then we skip one Shabbat, if that's the case. If it wasn't Rosh Chodesh and Shabbat, we skip one Shabbat, Bishniyah, and then on the second Shabbat, we read Parshat Zachor. If Rosh Chodesh was on Shabbat, the second Shabbat will be Parshat Zachor. If it was during the week, and we moved it earlier to the Shabbat before Rosh Chodesh, then you skip one Shabbat, and then the next Shabbat, you read Parshat Zachor. And the reason, as the Gemara is going to tell us, is to be masmich, the Mechiyat Amalek, to the story of the Megillah, which also involves Haman, who is a descendant of Amalek, trying to destroy us, and Hashem's interceding on our behalf. B'shlishit, on the third Shabbat, you read Parah Duma, Parshat Parah, u'b'rivayit, Achor Shezeh Lachem. And on the fourth week, you read Parshat HaChodesh. Now, Parshat HaChodesh is relevant because it's speaking about Rosh Chodesh Nisan, so that makes sense to read it for Rosh Chodesh. Parah Duma, Rashi says over here, you read it beforehand because you want people to become tahor in order to be ready to bring their korbanei pesach. And so that's the order. Although Rashi then quotes from the Yerushalmi and says that really it should have been the other order, because the order historically was the fact that they put the Mishkan together, and then on the second day of the Mishkan, they burnt the parah duma and they started to be metaher everybody. And therefore, historically, it would have been the other way around. Nevertheless, the Yerushalmi says that we move parah duma up earlier, even though it's not historically in order, because Tarat Yisrael, because that talks about the Tara of Klal Yisrael, and that's something that we put an emphasis on, and something that almost, in a sense, are praying that we can have back again, and therefore we put it before Parshat HaChodesh. Although, interestingly enough, the Mishnah Berurah in Tavresh Pehe, Ot Aleph, by the Arba Parshiot, explains with regard to Parshat Parah, Hashlishiti Parshat Parah Duma, Bibi Shabbat Kodem Parshat HaChodesh, that comes before Parshat HaChodesh, Ken Hayis Srefataba Midbar Samuch Nisan, because it was burnt up in the Midbar close to Nisan, Kdei Lazot Bait Yisrael Be'efer HaChatat, in order to be Metaris Yisrael, Miyad Achara Kamat HaMishkan, right immediately after Hakamat HaMishkan, Kdei Shu Torim Yuchu Lasot the Pesach Bizmano, which seemed to imply that it took place during the Shivat Yimei HaMiluim. And he speaks about the prayer for the future, that Hashem should sprinkle on us the Mayim Torim very soon with the Gula Tida. So the Mishnah Berurah actually says that historically Parah Duma was first, and therefore it's in the right order of reading Parshat Parah and then Parshat HaChodesh. The only issue with all of this is that there is somewhat of a chicken and egg situation with this issue, which is that the Parah Duma requires to be burnt on Har HaZeitim opposite the Kodesh HaKodeshim, or that means in the time of the Mishkan, it would require the Mishkan to be there in order to burn the Parah Duma. So how could you have a Parah Duma that predated the Mishkan? And if you don't have it predate the Mishkan, how can you get anybody tahor in time to do it in the Mishkan? So there has to be some sort of balance here between doing the Parah Duma and also being metaher the individual so that they could come and do the Avodah in the Mishkan as it was consecrated, and that might relate to the Shivat Yimei HaMiluim, where they did the Parah Duma maybe and Metaher them during the Shivat Yimei HaMiluim, so that by the eighth day they were completely Tahor, they were for sure Tahor. B'chamishit, on the fifth way, Chozrim Nekesidran, you go back to the normal way. B'chol Mafsikim, on all these days, you stop the normal Torah reading, and you read from the Inyan Adiyoma, Roshei Chodoshim, Chanukah, Purim, Taniyot, Umamadot, Uveyom HaKippurim. All of these days override what would be the normal Torah reading. As the Baal Tosafot point out here, why is Yom HaKippurim mentioned and not the other Moadim? So Tosafot claims that all of these are speaking about Torah reading that involves three aliyot. Three aliyot, which means a normal Torah reading. So on a normal weekday Torah reading, it would be supplanted by Rosh Chodesh, Chanukah, Purim, Tanit, which we read by Yechau, or by Mamadot, where we read from Breishit, they would supplant the normal Parshat HaShavua. And the same is true on Yom HaKippurim at Mincha time, if it falls out on Shabbat, where you normally have read from the Parshat HaShavua, Yom Kippur overrides that, and you read Parshat HaRayot, which is not true by the other Moadim, don't have a Kriyat Torah during Mincha, and therefore you read from the Parshat HaShavua at Mincha on a regular Moed. And that's what Tosafot says is being referenced to here, but it is actually true of other Moadim as well, that they override the normal reading of Shabbat. Tanan Chatam. We have a Mishnah there. Bechad Badar Mashmim al Shkalim. This is the first Mishnah in Shkalim. That on the first of Adar, they used to start announcing that you have to bring the Shkalim to the Mikdash. Ve'al HaKilayim. And that one should start removing the Kilayim that has grown during the rainy season in the fields and has not been noticed yet. You should go and pull it out and remove it so it doesn't continue to grow. Bishlam al HaKilayim Dizman Zriyahi. Okay, with regards to the Kilayim, I understand because this is the time of planting, not literally planting, but the time of the emergence of the planting that was there beforehand. Ela Shkalim Inalon. How do you know that this is the time for the Shkalim? Amar Rabbi Tavi, Amar Rabbi Oshaya, Amar Kral, the Pasuk says, by the Korban of Rosh Chodesh, Zot Alot Chodesh, Bechodesho, the Chodshei Hashanah. As Rashi says over there, the word Chodesh appears too many times over there, and therefore Amar Torah, Chadesh, Vavei Korban, Mitshuma Chadasha, that one should renew and bring from the new budget year of the Beit HaMikdash. Now, how do we know what that budget year is? The Gemara in Rosh Hashanah tells us in Dav Zayin that there's a Gzeres Shavah of a Chodesh Hazeh Lachem that we read in Parshat Bo that refers to Nisan, and the Chodesh as mentioned here, that's also Nisan, to tell us that the fiscal or the budget year of the Mikdash starts in Nisan. Therefore, they have to collect the Chatzi Shekel, which is the funding for the Korbanot of the year from Klal Yisrael. They have to be brought in time to start on the first of Nisan. And came into Nisan Boi Akruve Mitruma Chadasha. Since you have to start the new budget year in Nisan, Kadminan Bikarinan Bechad Badar. We start reading Parshat Shkalim on Rosh Chodesh Adar a month beforehand to give people time. Keichid delay to Shkalim the Mikdash. So people will pay in their Machetzi the Shekel in time so they can start the new budget year. Come on, who's this like? Dolok Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. This is not like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Di Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Amar Shtei Shabbatot. When it comes to how long in advance you need to start preparing for something, a significant event that's coming up, there's a machloket between the Chachamim Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, the Tanya. Sholim Yilchot HaPesach Kodem Pesach Shloshim Yom. The Chachamim believe you start to investigate, to learn, to open up the issues that relate to a holiday of Pesach 30 days before Pesach. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Amar Shtei Shabbatot. You do it 2 weeks before. So his raya is from the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu is standing on Rosh Chodesh Nisan telling the people about Korban HaPesach, that's 2 weeks in advance. And the Chachamim's proof is from the fact that in Parshat Balotcha, that on the Pesach Rishon, Moshe is telling the people about what's going to happen on Pesach Sheni, so that's 30 days in advance. So here you see that when you do it 30 days in advance, this seems to favor the position of the Chachamim. It says, Afilu Teima Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, Kevin Damarmar, B'chamishasar Bo Shulchanot Yoshvim B'Medina, that the way that they structured it is that the money changers up to the 15th of Adar used to sit out in the cities in order to allow people to bring their machatzit shekel and collect it. Ubuchavei yoshvim b'migdash. And on the 25th, they come back to the migdash, mishum shulchanot, kadminan v'karinat. So because of the shulchanot, which start on the 15th of Adar, so for Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, that's 2 weeks before that would be Rosh Chodesh Adar. So it's not 30 days in advance of the budget year, but it's 2 weeks in advance of when they're going to be found in the cities where people can bring their machatzit shekel to these individuals and they can collect it. Now they move on Chavei Yoshvim B'Mikdash. On the 25th, they move to the Mikdash, either because it's already come very close to the budget year and they need to start consolidating and bringing everything into the Mikdash. So it might just be a practical reason. Rashi says it's a significant threshold because at that point they start to collateralize people who haven't paid their machatzit shekel and force them to pay up. The Ritva suggests that it's because the majority of people already put their money in, and therefore they don't need to be out in the cities anymore. And there are those one that suggest that Chavei Adar is significant because that's the first day of creation, according to Rabbi Yoshua's view that the world was created in Nisan, and also could be the beginning of the Miluim. And so therefore it's a significant day where they make the transition to move the Shulchanot from the cities back into towards the Mikdash. And for the Chachamim, obviously, the 30 days is in advance of when the budget year begins, 30 days before we start announcing that they have to bring their Machatzit HaShekel. It also relates to what we saw in the Agadot earlier in the Masechta, that Hashem foresaw that Haman was going to pay the Shkalim in order to annihilate Bnei Israel, and he was Makdim, the Shkalim of Bnei Israel, to be before the Shkalim of Haman. So not only was that true historically, but it was also true every year. We have the shkalim be brought before the incident of Purim. And therefore we read the parshia of shkalim in advance of Purim in order to upset the shkalim of Haman. Now the Gemara continues and says, my parshat shkalim. What exactly is parshat shkalim? Rav amar tzavet b'nei Yisrael amar talehem et korbani lachmi, which is really the parshat ha-tamid, but what he's referencing to is the parshat ha-tamid, the parsha of Shabbat, Shnei Kvasim, and then the parsha of Rosh Chodesh. So he thinks that Parshat Shkalim is Rosh Chod Shechem. And Ushmel Amar Kitisa, what we read for Parshat Shkalim is Parshat Kitisa. Bishlam Alamand Amar Kitisa, Anu Dekarila Parshat Shkalim. That makes sense that you call it Parshat Shkalim, Dichtib Be Shkalim. Because Parshat Kitisa is about bringing the Machatzita Shekel, and there it makes sense to call it Parshat Shkalim. Alamand Amar Et Kurbani Lachmi, according to Rab, who says that it relates to the Parshia of Rosh Chodesh, Midei Shkalim Ketive Hatam. Are Shkalim even mentioned in the Parshia? The Gemara says in. Time am I. Why do we read Parshat Shkalim or Rosh Chodesh? Ki Rabbi Tabi. Like we saw before about Rabbi Tabi, that because it has to do with the new fiscal year of the Beit HaMikdash. And therefore that limud comes out of the Parshia of Rosh Chodesh. And since it comes out of the Parshia of Rosh Chodesh, therefore it's relevant to the Shkalim. So now the Gemara flips that reasoning on its head and says, Vishlam alam andamar tzavet b'nei so mishum tiklevi kovernot ha'atom ki Rabbi Tabi. It makes sense to read the Parsha of Rosh Chodesh because the whole reason for the Shkalim is for the new budget year to bring the Korbanot, and therefore reading about the Korbanot is a relevant topic. The Korbanot are mentioned there at all. So what does that have to do with the new budget year in the Mikdash? Because the Shkalim that were mentioned in Parshat Kitisa were utilized to make the sockets for the Krashim to sit on. And that we know because in Parshat Pikudei, when it tallies up all the silver that was given, it takes the 603,550 people of Bnei Israel, and each gave a half shekel. That amount adds up to the amount of the Kikar La'aden, enough to make all the Adanim of the Mishkan, and therefore there was no money left over to be used for the Korbanot. Where it says, Ketani Rav Yosef, Shlosh Trumotim, that the Parshat Kitisa, it mentions three times the word Truma. So it says, Kitisa et Rosh Bnei Yisrael, and then the next pasuk begins, Zeit nu kol over al pikudim, machatzit ha-shekel v'shekel ha-kodesh, esrim gerah ha-shekel, machatzit ha-shekel, truma la-Hashem. Kol over al pikudim, miben esrim shana v'mal yitain, trumat ha-Shem, that's number two. Hashir yelo yarbeh, v'dalo yamit, machatzit ha-shekel, letet et trumat ha-Shem, nechaper al nafshot teichem. So you see, trumat ha-Shem mentioned three times, three psukim in a row. The first one mentions that it was machatzit ha-shekel. Then the last one mentions, Hashir lo yarbeh, v'dalo lo yamit. So that one seems to be limited also to Matzchitzit HaShekel. The middle one just says, Kol Overa Pikudim gives Yitain Trumat Hashem. And from that we are darshin that there's Shel Mizbeach La Mizbeach. One Matzchitzit HaShekel collected to fund the Korbanot. Vashel Adanim La Adanim. And the ones that were used for the Trumat HaMishkan were used for the Adanim, for the sockets. Vashel Bedek HaBayit. And there was a third one that was the Bedek HaBayit, an unlimited resource that was donated to the Mishkan. So that the first Pasuk that speaks about the Machatzit HaShekel, that's Trumat Hashem, that's for speaking about the Adanim. The second Pasuk that has no limitations is speaking about the open donation to the Mishkan. And the third Pasuk is speaking about Hashir Lo Yarbeh V'Da Lo Yamit. Again, it's Machatzit HaShekel, that's for the budget year to collect for the Korbanot of the upcoming year. And that's the limud that Rav Yosef brings. And that's why Parshat Shkalim is relevant to the budget year and to the Korbanot. The only little issue with that is that Rashi, in the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar, which starts in the second year in the second month, says that census which they took then was the truma that they collected. That's how they got the machatzit shekel for the payment of the korbanot. The only problem with that is that it starts on Rosh Chodesh Iyar and not on Rosh Chodesh Nisan. And that means that they had a month in the Mishkan where it wasn't funded according to that view in Rashi. And therefore it's more likely that they had to collect that earlier time and maybe that they ended the census on the second year in the second month. But they had started earlier to collect because they need to start the budget year of the Mishkan. And in the Korbanot, we want everybody to have an equal hand and equal participant. We don't want there to be any unevenness or inequality in the Korbanot at Tzibur because they belong to everyone. And therefore, it has to be a Machatzit HaShekel, not used from the leftover donations from the Mishkan. So, Bishlam Alamanda Amar Kitisa Einu Deshani. Hai Rosh Chodesh Mishar Roshei Chodeshim. According to one who says that we read Kitisa on this Rosh Chodesh when it falls out on Shabbat, then this Rosh Chodesh is different than any other Rosh Chodesh. Because every other Rosh Chodesh you read, Rosh Chodesh Shechem, this Rosh Chodesh you read, Kitisa. Laman Damar Tzav et Korbani Maishani. What's different between this Rosh Chodesh and any other Rosh Chodesh where you read the Parshia of Rosh Chodesh? Shani, the other Rosh Chodesh, Shredim, Kari Shita, Bin Yonadiyoma. Because in other Rosh Chodeshim, if we follow that on a Shabbat, you read six Aliyot from the Parshat HaShavua. V'chad b'Rosh Chodesh, and then the final one, the seventh Aliyah, would come from Rosh Chodesh. That's based on the view that the Shvi Ola L'Maftir, the way that we do it today, where Shvi is not Ola L'Maftir, we read seven from the Parshat HaShavua, and then the eighth one is the Maftir that comes from Rosh Chodesh. V'ilo Yidna Kulu b'Rosh Chodesh. On the other hand, today you read all seven Aliyot from the Parshat of Rosh Chodesh. Anicha L'man D'Amar L'Seder Parshiotu Chuzer. Right, that goes well according to what the Gemara we're going to see on the upcoming daf, that Arba Parshiot, according to the one who says that you change the whole Parshat HaShavua, that works well, because now you're reading Rosh Chodesh as the Parshat HaShavua, period, and all seven Aliyot come from that. Mandamar L'Seder Haftarot Uchuzer, that the Arba Parshiot only change Laftorah, Maftir and Laftorah, don't change the Kriyat HaTorah of the day, Parshat HaYoma Karinan, and therefore you read the regular Parshat HaShavua, Mai Shani. What's the difference between this Rosh Chodesh, Adar, with Shkalim, and any other Rosh Chodesh? Shani, Dila Rosh Chodeshim, on a regular Rosh Chodesh, Kari Shita Bin Yonah D'Yoma, read six from the Parshat HaShavua, V'chad Kari B'Rosh Chodesh, and then the final one you read from Rosh Chodesh, the seventh Aliyah, or for us, the eighth Aliyah, comes from the Maftir for Rosh Chodesh, V'ilu Ha'idna, when it's Parshat Shkalim, Karu Tlata Bin Yonah D'Yoma, you read three Aliyot from Parshat HaShavua, V'arbu Karu B'Rosh Chodesh, and then you read four Aliyot from the Parshat Shkalim, which is the Parshia of Rosh Chodesh. Meitavei, is that really true? Rosh Chodesh Adar Shkaliot B'Shabbat, Korim per Parshat Shkalim u'Maftirim b'Yoyada Kohen. Then you read from Parshat Shkalim, and Aftorah comes from Yoyada Kohen, which is about the collection of the funds to restore the Mikdash in the time of Yoash, Melech Yehuda. Bishlam alaman damar ki tisa, haynu d'Maftirim b'Yoyada d'Domile. That has similarities, meaning that whatever you finish off with as the Maftir, the Aftorah should be topically relevant or connected to that. D'chtiv kesef nafshot erko. It uses the same language that is used by the collection of the machatzita shekel, the chaper al nafshot echem, and that there's a collection of the monies for the mikdash, restoration of the mikdash. So do you have a collection by kitisa from the mishkan? So that makes sense topically to have that be the Aftorah. Alamanda marit korbani lachmi midomi. If you have the reading being Rosh Chodesh, why would you then have the Haftorah be from Yoyada Kohen about the collecting of the Shkalim? So the Gemara says, Domi kid Rabbi Tami. It's similar like Rabbi Tami, because the reason we're reading about Rosh Chodesh is because that's the source for the fact that there's a new budget year coming up in the Mikdash, and that's why we have to announce a month in advance to collect the Machatzita Shekel, and that's the same thing they were doing there in Yoyada. They were collecting money to restore the Mikdash and do the Berek HaBayit. So Meitavei, Chaliot B'Parshas Mukhala, Ben Milafanea, Ben Milachorea. What happens if it turns out that Parshat Shkalim and Parshat HaShavua are the same Parsha, and they're back-to-back? Either Parshat Kitisa comes before Parshat Shkalim, or Parshat Shkalim comes before Parshat Kitisa. Korino Tava Koflimata. You read Parshat Shkalim that week, and then the next week you read Parshat Kitisa, or vice versa. You read Parshat Kitisa, and the next week you read Parshat Shkalim, which also comes from Kitisa. Bishal Amandamar Kitisa Ainu Dimitrami Bahu Zimna. Then you can fall out on the same time. You could have Parsha Kitisa falls out during the year at the same time that Parsha Shkalim can fall out. Alamadamar Tzabit Kormeni, which is from Parsha Pinchas, Mit Merami Ba'al Zimna. Does it ever fall out during the time of Parsha Shkalim? How could you ever have it be that Parsha Pinchas and Parsha Shkalim are a week apart? Mar says, in, yes, Lemnei Marova. That's for the people in Eretz Yisrael, the Maske Doraitim Tlat Shin, that they had a triannual cycle. They did not finish the Torah every year, but they finished the Torah every 3 years. In truth, if we look in the sources, they really finished the Torah every 3.5 years. And that means that they would finish 2 cycles of the Torah every 7 years. And that would then match up with the Hakel, that was the celebration of Simchat HaTorah, or the Siyum HaTorah, because they would finish the second 3.5 cycle right around Shemini Atzeret. And that was then the celebration, or maybe the source for Simchat Torah. And it also turned out that the first 3.5 year cycle would finish around Pesach, which would be in the time for the Vidoy Maiser, of the 4th year of the Maestrot cycle. So it might actually turn out to be that was also something of significance that it fell out during that period. So you'd have 2 significant periods. In the 4th year on Pesach, which is Vidui Maiser, you'd have 1 finishing of the cycle of the Torah. And then 3.5 years later, you'd have a 2nd finishing of the cycle of the Torah in the 8th year, the year after the Shemitah, when you do Hakel, and they would finish around Shemini Atzeret time. And that might be the source for Simchat Torah, not just the fact that there's a 2nd day of Yom Tov in Chutz La'aretz. Tanya Gavate de Shmuel, we have a braita that supports Shmuel's contention. Rosh Chodesh Adar Shkaliot B'Shabbat Korim Kitisa U'Maftirim B'Yoyada Kohen. Pretty straightforward, explicit, that is like Shmuel. And that's the way we paskin halacha, even though generally Rab Shmuel B'Isurim and Baruch Chaim, we paskin like Rav. Over here we paskin like Shmuel, and Parshat Shkalim is read from Parshat Kitisa. I'm Rabbi Yitzchak Nafka, Rosh Chodesh Adar Shkaliot B'Shabbat Motziin Shlosh Torot. If Rosh Chodesh Adar falls out on Shabbat, we take out three Sifrei Torah. B'korim Bahen, Echad Bin Yonel Shayom. The first one you read from Parshat HaShavua, V'Echad B'Shal Rosh Chodesh. The second Sefer Torah you read from Rosh Chodesh, V'Echad, and the Mafti you read from Ki Tisa. So that's why I have three Sifrei Torah. V'Amar Rav Yitzchak Nafko. The same is true by Rosh Chodesh Tevet, Shechaliot B'Shabbat, Mevin Shlosh Torot. Rosh Chodesh Tevet always falls out during Chanukah. Sometimes it also falls out on Shabbat. So Rosh Chodesh Tevet falls out on Shabbat. Then you also bring out three Sifrei Torah. V'Korim B'Echad, Echad Bin Yonel Shayom. The first Torah you read from Parshat HaShavua, V'Chad B'Rosh Chodesh. Then the second Sefer Torah you read from Rosh Chodesh. And the third one, Echad B'Chanukah, and the third one you read from Chanukah, B'Tzricha. And I need both of these statements of Rav Yitzchak Nafka. Why can't I infer one from the other? Once I know that when you have these events that coincide, I take out Shlosh Sifrei Torah. If you told me one, I would know the other. Deed Mar Baha. Because if you only told me the one about Rosh Chodesh Tevet, Baha Kamar Rav Yitzchak, by Rosh Chodesh Tevet, that's what he held. Of Bahach, by Rosh Chodesh Adar, Kerav Svirulei. Damar Parshat Shkalimim et Karmin Lachmi. That the Parshat Shkalim is the same as the Maftir that you would read for Rosh Chodesh. There you only know two Sifrei Torah. Ubushtev Torot Sagi, and therefore they only need two Sifrei Torah. Kamash Malan, that he thinks like Shmuel, and Paskins like Shmuel, that there are three Sifrei Torah, even on Rosh Chodesh Adar, that has Parshat Shkalim, like Shmuel. Velemaha. So just tell us about Parshat Shkalim, below Bayach, and then we won't need to know about Rosh Chodesh Tevet. Mar says, Enochanami, that's true. Chad Michlal Kaverta Itmar. He did not say the other one explicitly, but once we knew the halacha that he said by Rosh Chodesh Adar, then we applied it also to Rosh Chodesh Tevet. Not that Rav Yitzchak Nafka said it explicitly about Rosh Chodesh Tevet, but we inferred what he said about Rosh Chodesh Adar and Parshat Shkalim, that we break out three Sifrei Torah when it comes to Rosh Chodesh Tevet, when you have three different topics, or relevant in Yanei de Yoma, Parshat HaShavua, the Chanukah and Rosh Chodesh, we take out three. And Tosfos points out that the reason that you had to say it, even though it's an obvious extrapolation, is because maybe somebody who said it was found in the city of Rav. And in that city, they only took out two Torot on Rosh Chodesh Adar. So even though they heard the din, they were able to extrapolate the din to Rosh Chodesh Tevet, even though the din wasn't applicable to them there. And that's why he said it, even though it's an obvious extrapolation from that which you know about Rosh Chodesh Adar, if you know that statement of Rav Yitzchak Nafka. The other thing to note is that the Gemara in Yoma also discusses this issue on Daf Ayin, as to when are you allowed to take out different Sifrei Torah, because it could be perceived as being a pgam in the Sefer Torah that you have to replace and bring out a new Sefer Torah. So the Gemara there says if the topic changes, if it's a new topic and a new aliyah, then we don't suspect that the first Torah was nifgam, and therefore it's not a pgam to take out the new Sefer Torah. If you're reading from the same topic and then you change Sefer Torah, that would be an indication of a problem or maybe a possible problem with the first Sefer Torah. And that's why the Kohen Gadol in Yom Kippurim takes out one Sefer Torah, reads from Parshat Achrimot, Parshat Emor, and then he rolls it up and says, Baal Peh, what's found in Parshat Pinchas, because if we were to bring out another Sefer Torah from Parshat Pinchas, which is the same topic, that would cast aspersions on the first Sefer Torah, or would be an affront to the first Sefer Torah, and therefore he reads it Baal Peh to indicate that there's more than that's written in the Torah, but not to be pogam by that Sefer Torah. That's not true here in these cases where we take out three Sefer Torah, because each topic is delineated and separate, and therefore each Torah is reading that particular item, and it's not taking away, or it doesn't cast aspersions on any of the other Sifrei Torah. In terms of how we read it, the general principle is Tadir, Sheno Deir, Tadir, Kodem. So Tadir over here is the Parshat HaShavua, because that's the reading for every Shabbat. We follow the normal cycle, therefore that goes first. After that comes Rosh Chodesh, which is 12 times during the year that you have Rosh Chodesh, versus Chanukah, which only comes out 8 times. Although that may not be as simple as we think, because the Gemara in Bamei Madlikim has a Havamina that may be the other way around, that you do Chanukah first, and then Rosh Chodesh as the Maftir. And that might be because when you have consecutive days together, like Chanukah, which are 8 consecutive days, versus Rosh Chodesh, which is dispersed over the year, maybe that's considered to be more Tadir than having it dispersed over the year. Tosafot in Bamei Madlikim brings another reason, which is that Persume Nisa. And therefore, since Persume Nisa is more important principle, we leave Chanukah to the end, because then if you read the Maftir from Chanukah, you also read off Torah from Chanukah, and therefore that'll be more Persume Nisa, and that's why we leave it till last. And even though Persume Nisa might have told you to go first with Chanukah before Rosh Chodesh, turns out the other way around, that we put Tadir, even though it's not a consecutive day, plus Persume Nisa gets enhanced by doing it last, and that gives us the order of Parshat HaShavua, then Rosh Chodesh, that we bring the first 6 aliyahs from Parshat HaShavua, the 7th aliyah from Rosh Chodesh, and the Maftir we read for whatever day of Chanukah that it is. Okay, we're going to stop here. 8 lines from the bottom of Chavtet Amud Bet.